Kane is in the building.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second episode of Season 6. I'm your host, Stephen Benazzo, and I'm once again joined by
Alex Castle
and Josh Romowitz.
And, of course, cannot forget the man of many hats, TJ Hummel.
Oh, thanks for the intro, Stevie.
Yeah, you got it, always. So, you fellas held it down last week at a prior commitment, so couldn't make it, but great episode last week with a license plate guy, and what a way to kick off our new season, football season. So now another weekend and first week in football over and done with. What a crazy first week of football. Oh my gosh. But a great first week, very entertaining, a lot of new storylines and some upsets, some new guys really performing well, some guys they thought would perform well that kind of, you know, didn't really show a lot, but you know, it's still really early in this year. And then, you know, baseball season winding down too. So if we have a chance at the end, or really I think I will make a point to talk some baseball because isn't the playoff race is heating up and MVP race is really neck and neck, especially in the American League. So let's just get right to it. So football, week one, Castle, TJ, our teams are 1-0, beating some big teams too. I mean, contenders in each conference. You guys went into Nashville, offset the Titans, who were the number one seed last year, and then my Bears held it down on that slip and slide in Soldier Field. And, you know, I'm sure as many football fans have seen the awesome GIF and video of Justin Fields sliding, or the whole offense sliding, and then, you know, Fields rising up slowly, you know. But, yeah, I would say we had a really fun week. It didn't start off that great. I mean, for both teams, the first half was brutal. They looked awful, right? And then second half, our teams really turned around, and we both have new coaches. So I think – for both sides, it was just good to see that when our teams were struggling, like we've seen the past many years, but then our new coaches were able to adjust. And especially you guys, and I want you guys to go talk more about it. Since you had to go into that, you were away, you weren't home at MetLife, you were in Nashville. So I'm sure you guys, though, obviously the win is great, but what might be greater is Saquon's performance. Am I right?
It was so good to see Barkley like his old self again. The past two seasons, he just hasn't been there physically, mentally, and I think this offseason, he really took the time to work on both of those things. And he flat out said that he had something to prove. And I think he did. And I think he will continue to. He is just the spark of the offense. He's a great leader, a great energizer. I think he really understands what it's like to be a Giant. And I'm just looking forward to seeing more of what he could do. But I just don't want it to all fall on him. And, you know, that I think goes with the play calling and what Dable and Kafka got drawn up for the weeks to come. But that was the highlight of the game for me, was seeing Saquon be Saquon again. And hey, it showed. He was the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, which was very hyped to see. So that was just so fun to watch him be his old self.
Oh, yeah. And he was, I mean, you could tell he wasn't, you know, because even his rookie year when he like had that monster season, you know, he always wanted to bounce things to the outside and really, he was just always going east and west, it felt like. But Sunday, he was going north and south. And even there was one play that really stuck out to me, and he didn't gain that many yards. But he got the ball. I forgot if it was just an outside handoff or a little, like, screen. And he got it, and he kind of tried making a juke on the defender. And the defender, like, didn't bite. And then Saquon just lowered his shoulder and just, like, you know, forced contact on him and, like, drove him back for a couple yards. It's like – I liked seeing that from Saquon, and I think I think we'll be seeing more of it because he's definitely your best playmaker on that team. And you guys got a lot, you know. I think Tony will get involved more. I hope so, because he's a game like changer when with the ball. Like, it's tough to stop him. It's never, and like, he never goes down from the first guy. He's always breaking tackles or breaking out of tackles. So sucks seeing Wandale get hurt that early. I don't think it's anything serious, so hopefully he'll come back and have more of a role. And then TJ, I want to talk to you about the defense. Because listen, going in, I was like, you know, your offense has a lot of weapons, and I'm sure with Dable being an offensive-minded guy and Kafka coming from the Chiefs, like, I could see them improving. But the defense, I could have seen a big decline because you lost Patrick Graham. Now, Wink Martindale is a great defensive coordinator coming from Baltimore. But, you know, you just cut Blake Martinez right before the season started, you know, regular season started. You were missing Azeez Ojulari and Kayvon Thibodeau, your two pass rushers. You know, secondary, you don't have Bradbury anymore. So Dory's the number one guy. And then you have, you know, some depth guys being, you know, higher on the depth chart. So what did you see? Like, I got to say, the defense looked great. They really limited Derrick Henry. Even the receivers didn't really do anything. I think the guy that really burned you guys the most was Dontrell Hilliard, who had the two touchdowns and one of them being kind of long. So what did you see from the defense? And, you know, did you like Wink's approach to, you know, game planning against the Titans?
Coming into the season, I knew the defense was going to be, it was going to be an issue, especially because we're being led right now by not so experienced linebackers. And like you'd mentioned before, like, cutting Blake Martinez was huge, but I had a feeling Wink was going to work some magic. And it's not very often you get to see a defense hold Derrick Henry under 100 yards, but also hold him to no touchdowns. And everyone's seeing that hit that Tay Crowder put on him. And you don't see Derrick Henry airborne from a tackle very often. And so I think that was really nice to see. Our corner and safety room is definitely hurting a little bit. Aaron Robinson just had his appendix out, so he's out for Sunday's game. So I guess it's already that next man up mentality, but I'm pretty confident in Wink and Dable, and hopefully Azeez and Kayvon Thibodeau are back, because that will be huge. Because Dexter Lawrence was our big defensive guy. And I expected Leonard Williams to have a big game. He didn't. I expected a lot, not a lot from the defense, but I expected a better performance. And I liked what I saw from like Tay Crowder, from Robinson, and then in a few snaps, he dropped back in coverage well. But like overall, going down 13-0 into halftime, it definitely sucked. But as the defense always has been in the last, what, six seasons, Castle, the defense has always been a bright spot for the Giants. Through all the ups and downs, they kept him in the game. And like Castle had said, I don't want to talk too much more about it, but Saquon put on a show the second half. And it was really nice to see the Giants keep the ball and let the defense take a breather and get as much rest as they possibly could to keep the game the way it was. And I guess 47 yards was just a little too long for Bullock.
Well, when I saw him step on the field, I didn't expect him to make a 20-yard field goal. I mean, that dude looks so out of shape, but you know what? God bless him for still being a kicker. But man, if I'm the Titans, there's got to be someone else out there that looks a little more in shape. But yeah, I mean, and it was cool seeing, you know, Dayball and all the Giants players in the locker room, you know, jumping and dancing kind of, and just really excited to get that first win in week one, because that was the first time in 6 years. Now, you know, in the other locker room for the New York team, which obviously the Giants were in, you know, Nashville, but in MetLife in the Jets locker room, I'm sure there wasn't too much dancing or celebrating going on as the Jets lost. to the Ravens. So, you know, he kind of expected that, but didn't help when the Jets had their backup quarterback in. And what was the final score? Was it 24-10?
24-9.
So Fromwitz, you know, I know there's probably not too much that you were really liked what you see or too many pros that you could take from the game. Well, kind of what are your thoughts on the game? And listen, like I said, going to Joe Flacco, like, it's tough. You know, if that's how they played with Zach Wilson, then I'd be nervous. But just week one, you know, you had a lot of rookies out there, and then you had Joe Flacco out there. You didn't have your starting quarterback. So, you know, give us a little more your thoughts being the Jets fan.
Having Flacco was definitely very tough because it looks like a Walmart Tom Brady out there, in the sense that pressure comes from any side and Joe Flacco's not moving out of the pocket. He's either completing a pass or he's getting hit. But with the banged up offensive lineman, chances are he was getting hit more than he was completing passes. It was brutal to watch. But there were a lot of positives, in the sense that our defense, which I really wasn't so sure how we would be because of how young we are, they looked really good. And like, they shut down the Baltimore run game. They held them to only 60 yards running in total. Granted, they were without J.K. Dobbins, but they had this dude named Lamar Jackson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he only had 15 yards rushing in the game. And that is very impressive to do, no matter what team is on the other side of the ball. So hats off to Quincy Williams, especially chasing that dude around all day and showing no fear getting in front of Lamar Jackson. Our secondary, it looked all right. There's definitely improvement, and I really don't like Bryce Hall at the slot corner. But Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed looked very good. DJ Reed with the interception. Yes, it was garbage time, but still counts in the stats. He still has an interception on the year. Sauce Gardner had a very beautiful pass breakup on Mark Andrews, who is no easy task guarding. That's a 6'6 tight end, very athletic tight end, that he shut down what would have been a touchdown. So it was good to see the rookie making plays. On the offense is where I had issues. Yes, Joe Flacco is a big issue. Yes, the offensive line is the issue. But get our receivers the ball. Mike LaFleur, I don't know what he was thinking, but we have weapons. All of you guys could agree, you're football fans, you know the Jets have young, talented, speedy, skill receivers. Elijah Moore, Garrett Wilson, Braxton Berrios, Corey Davis even. There's no reason why the rookie, Garrett Wilson, should only be on the field for less than 10 passes, less than 15% of the total snaps, essentially. But we'll end up second or third on the team in receptions. If that's the case, you want to feed the guy the ball. Get him on the field more. I get if you're trying to work him into the offense and whatnot, but he showed that he is capable of making plays when he's on the field. Last year, we saw a very fun offense. Yes, the results may not have been there, but I want to see jet sweeps. I want to see the backyard plays. I get Joe Flacco is not a moving quarterback, but you could still run play actions. The run game was there. I saw some good runs by Breece Hall and Michael Carter. The run game just suddenly disappeared in the second half. Joe Flacco threw the ball 60 times, but you can't do that. With Joe Flacco and the pass rush they are facing, the run game was there. You got to keep letting those two backs get the ball. Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson need to get the ball more often than they did, because they can do damage with the ball. It doesn't need to be 30, 40-yard bombs that you would expect Zach Wilson to make. It could be short routes because they can outrun defenders. So, yes, the results sucked, but I do see the change happening. But obviously, because it's the Jets, we're going to be stuck in the mud for a while, but I'm very optimistic that we're crawling to closer to the top of the getting out of that hole instead of being at the complete bottom of that hole.
Well, I did see on Twitter today, Zach Wilson was practicing, right?
Yes. It was expected. It's not any surprise. There was that was why the Jets didn't put him on the IR, is so he could work out, because he's a second year quarterback. He's 22 years old. You want him to be as comfortable with the receivers and as confident as can be before he's ready. So if that means 2-3 weeks worth of practice before he even gets in the game, then so be it. But
because I know they were saying week 4 is probably using him.
And that probably is still the target date. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, listen, but he's not the only guy that is going to miss time. And obviously he was missing time from when he got hurt in preseason. The Jets might be in kind of I don't know how the rest of your schedule looks for the next couple of weeks. Because Baltimore, that's a first tough game.
So the way the Jets schedule is set up is very weird this year. You're at home against Baltimore. Your first 4 opponents are against the AFC North, which is Baltimore. Then this week is Cleveland. Then the week after is Cincinnati. Then the week after is Pittsburgh. So that's the first 4 opponents before the rest of the schedule kicks in, which is obviously at least twice a year opponents, AFC East opponents. So it'll be interesting once that kicks in.
Yeah, that's a tough first 4 games to have.
AFC in general is a tough there's no easy opponents anymore in the AFC.
No. And that's why some of the injuries that happened to teams from week 1, and it's already starting with injuries, and we saw TJ Watt, and so he tore his pec. Now, the astonishing thing is, usually a torn pec, you're done for the year, And really, that's what they first ruled. And TJ Watt, even during the game, knew he tore his pec, because he literally, he was yelling to the sideline, "I tore my pec." And then pretty much, he went for the MRI and it revealed that he did. And then Schefter was, everyone was saying that most likely going to miss the year. But then he went and got second and third opinions from other doctors. And I guess he doesn't need surgery. He'll be back in like 6 weeks. So now the Steelers, TJ Watt plays a big role on that team. So do we think, and their defense looked insane Sunday against the reigning AFC champions, the Cincinnati Bengals, against an offense with Joe Burrow, another year healthy, another year starting, Ja'Marr Chase now in his second year. They still have all the same guys, and they upgraded the offensive line from the Super Bowl. And the fact that they went into Cincinnati, forced like 4 picks, how many sacks, touchdowns, do we see Pittsburgh's not only defense, but offense take a hit because of an injury to a guy like TJ Watt, who means so much to the team? Or do we think they'll be fine?
I think that's kind of a foolish question, because no matter the team, a guy like TJ Watt, who is arguably a top 3 talent in the NFL, no team can recover from that. The Rams, the Super Bowl champs, without Aaron Donald, would not be Super Bowl champs. Their team would look so different without him. So without TJ Watt, I think the Steelers' defense is going to suffer majorly. They're still a nasty defense. Minka Fitzpatrick had himself a hell of a game, but there's no TJ Watt pressuring the quarterback. They're going to suffer big time.
And no, that's fair. I just, I figured it, say like if a guy on a less talented defense got hurt, then I could really see the team crumbling. But like the Steelers, since they have so much talent, they have Cam Hayward, who's a great, defensive line presence, both run and pass. They have 2, they got Devin Bush, and then they signed Miles Jack, 2 fast, very athletic linebackers. The secondary, you got Minka Fitzpatrick, you have some solid corners. So that's why I thought, maybe they won't, especially 6 weeks, I think really won't, it'll hurt them. I think it will hurt them because, like you said, when you lose a guy of that caliber, sucks no matter what. They lost him for the year. That's a different question or a different, result. I think for 6 weeks, depending on their schedule, like I know they play New England this week and, you know, New England, the performance they're coming off, like they might be catching some of these teams at the right time. Well, like if you had to go a whole year without TJ Watt, who he tied the sack record last year, like then it could suck. Now, Castle and Hummel, I want to talk to you guys about this guy because you're very familiar with him. Dak Prescott hurt his hand, his thumb when he threw a pass, hit another guy. Now he's out for, I think they're saying what, like 6 to 8 weeks, right?
Yeah, 6 to 8.
I think that's a different, I think the Cowboys are screwed. I think Cooper Rush are backup. Like, I don't think they're going to be in a good position. And I think that's why teams in the NFC East will take advantage of that because we saw how they played with Dak. Now imagine without him.
I before they jump in, I just think that's kind of the same argument though with the Steelers and TJ Watt. Yes, they might have talent, but you look at who the Cowboys offense has. You still have Zeke Elliott. You still have Tony Pollard. You still have CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup when he's healthy. Like they still have weapons on offense, but they're obviously going to suffer a huge drop off without Dak. Steelers defense is going to suffer a huge drop off without TJ Watt. He broke the sack record last year.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though, and I agree with you. But the quarterback position is a lot different than...
Yes, it's the most important position. Don't get me wrong.
That's what, so, like, you know, like a team like the Bears, you know, the past couple years, are you know, we've had guys that, like, you know, like last year, our quarterback play was not good at all between three guys, Fields, Dalton, and Foles, you know? We still had Robert Quinn who got 18 and a half sacks, but it didn't really matter too much because our quarterback play was like, I think it's, you know, yes. And having an elite guy at the edge rusher is really important, but also having a quarterback is really important. I think in at least, you know, because they still have a guy like Cam Hayward and other guys, Alex Highsmith had like 3 sacks last game. They still have guys that can form pressure and get pressure to the quarterback. Especially Mac Jones, who's not a mobile guy, and I don't know the rest of their games that TJ Watt will be out for, but they will still be able to generate pressure. If not, they have a good secondary to cover, you know, whoever. The Cowboys, you know, you're going to have a guy who is not even like a borderline, like, solid backup. Like, he's not a good backup at all, you know, and if you can't run the ball and pass the ball, like, your offense is going to be it was non-existent when they had Dak and all these guys, and their line, the Cowboys' O line is not good right now. So that's why I think this Dak injury is going to be like have more of a bad result for the Cowboys than the TJ Watt to the Steelers. Castle and Hummel, TJ, I don't know why I just called you my last name, but because I call Castle by his last name. So pardon me. But
call me anything you want, Stevie, just not late for dinner. Okay.
You got it. Yeah, I like that, dude. That's good. I'm gonna keep that one if you don't mind.
Fine by me, man.
Yo, I'll Venmo you like 10 cents each time I use it. It's like a little patent, you know.
Little royalties, you know.
Exactly. So, Castle, we'll start with you. You think this Dak injury really have a big impact on the Cowboys? I mean, there's no way there's no way Cooper Rush goes in there and excels.
I think it's, you know, it's gonna have a tremendous impact, of course. You know, never ever want to give another team in the NFC East credit, but Dak has been solid for them. He's made them one of the more stronger regular season teams. He got the whole offense going. He was starting to develop some really good chemistry with Lamb. He's been working with Elliott for a couple seasons now. So I think it in that sense, it's going to hurt them. And I also think the line being banged up, you know, those two things mixed together, it's not going to be good. However, I do have to play a little devil's advocate here and say that I don't think they're totally screwed. They still got guys on the defense. I mean, let's not forget something here. Yes, the game against Tampa was awful. Only team in the league not to score anything. However, look who they were going up against and look at the parts of their defense that they're missing. So I think the game overall was just a bad game for them. Dak getting hurt, the start to finish, whatever. But you look at the rest of the season, I don't know. I mean, they still have Parsons, who is such a dominant force on that defense. They got Vandernesch, who's also a very dominant linebacker. So they still got guys on the defense that can keep them afloat. The real question is about this guy, Cooper Rush. I don't know too much about him based off of what you guys are saying. He's, you know, like a Mike Glenn. Like he'll walk in the game, he'll throw the ball in whatever direction Mike McCarthy tells him, and that'll be that.
The sad thing is, I think Mike Glennon's a better option than Cooper Rush.
And that's really sad, because if you can't throw the ball better than a giraffe, then you really need to check yourself. So I don't know. It's really tough to say. I think Dallas will be last in the division for the most part of the season. I think that Wentz is going to have a good season with Washington. But who knows? Because the thing is that, you know, like Josh was saying, they still got guys on the offense. It's not like Dak Prescott was the only guy and the offense is decimated. They still got a very solid tight end, very talented wide receiver. When Michael Gallup comes back, that's another guy. Zeke Elliott, Tony Pollard. So they still have these guys. So I think what it really comes down to, it's not Cooper Rush. It's the coaching staff. What can you do to pick up the pieces to work with this team? Because they have the reputation, and you guys want to say differently by all means, but I think they have the reputation for the past few seasons as one of the better regular season teams. And this is a guy that won a Super Bowl that Jerry Jones took a gamble on. So show him why you're there. I don't think Mike McCarthy is a good coach, but this is a real test. So overall, I think Dallas will be the bottom barrel team, but don't be shocked if they somehow keep afloat while Dak's gone. That's where I'll end that.
That's fair. Like you said, I really like the point where you said it's really up to the coaching staff, because yes, this is where, you know, Mike McCarthy, this is why you were hired to coach the Dallas Cowboys, you know, America's team. And, you know, you don't just get hired. Well,
That freeze died.
Yeah.
They're America's team. They don't wear America's colors. They lose on the big stage. No. Just want to put that out.
I'll make sure not to say that ever again, at least in this podcast. But, you know, you
can say it for whatever you want. I'm just saying anyone that calls them America's team should be shipped to Canada.
That's fair. So it looks like I'll be getting my ticket to Canada. But, you know, back to my point, you don't just get hired to be the Cowboys coach just because, you know, you got to have some reason. And then, like you said, you know, this is a good test. This is where, like, all right, you know, because it came out that they're not going to go after a top QB. And really, why would you? I think if they were to go after a guy like Jimmy G, it would cost them a lot. It would cost them a fortune to get a guy like him, because if 49ers know that, like, they want to keep him, but they know, like, a team like Dallas would be desperate, and they'll, like, you know, give us all this for 8 weeks. So looks like they're going to stick with a guy like Cooper Rush, or there's, you know, throwing the name like Cam Newton. Either way, I don't think not solid options, because Cam Newton, we've seen, is not what he once was. He's not Superman really anymore like he was in Carolina. So then you're going to have to game plan around, you know, like, all right, Cooper, like, this line is banged up. So, you know, how can we run the ball effectively? Because now we have a backup quarterback, but, you know, if we're not running effectively, how do we pass effectively with a backup with not as strong of an O-line that they're used to having? So it's going to be tough. And I think, you know, the Giants, you're playing them at a great time, not this upcoming Sunday, but the following Sunday. And we can talk more about that game, you know.
Monday, next, to be exact.
Next week, yeah. But that's a big Monday night game. I believe it's in MetLife too. Yeah, because you guys play them at Thanksgiving at Dallas. So you guys can definitely take advantage. And I think a lot of teams will take advantage of, you know, the Cowboys without Dak. So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, it sucks seeing these guys already go down this early, you know. And I'm sure as the season goes on, there's going to be more, you know, guys that go down. Unfortunately, it's just the nature of football. But you know, you got to take advantage of it. So, you know, it's already a lot of storylines going into just week two. And even this Thursday night game is going to be a brilliant game between the Chargers and the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are home. It's their home opener. So, and I mean, God, did Mahomes look fantastic. And Herbert looked pretty damn solid too. So the two of them clashing out on Thursday night football this week.
I think we need to queue up my audio from last week, Stevie. I don't know if you listened to the episode, but when we were, instead of doing a stardom sit-ems, we talked about games that we were looking forward to. And my game of the week, which pretty much lived up to, was the Chargers-Raiders matchup. And then I finished by saying, but it's not fair because any AFC West matchup will be the game of the week. And we're fortunate to have the Thursday matchup be the game of the week.
Oh yeah. It probably will be, you know, unless the Bears Packers, you know, maybe Sunday night just goes crazy, but like, no, seriously, like it's, that game should be a battle. It should be a shootout. And if it's not, I'll be shocked because both those offenses look like they cannot be stopped.
But to your point, like we were just talking about, injuries are playing a factor in that game already because the Chargers are going to be without Keenan Allen.
True. True.
I have him in fantasy, but you know what? It's a smart move because it's a short week. It's a lingering injury. So why rush it? But that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, it is. TJ, you sad for this game Thursday, huh?
Yeah, I was more excited to talk about the Cowboys. What? I don't know if you glossed over that part, Stevie. I just wanted to pull up some stats and be the Stephen A of this podcast, shall we?
He's putting his cowboy hat on for this one, so get ready.
That's Castle. That's clever. So, right here.
I want to just go at Castle's point a little bit and your point too, Stevie, with how you guys were talking about it's up to the coaches and Mike McCarthy. Let me just remind you about last season with Mike McCarthy. The Dallas Cowboys were penalized a total of 141 times for a total of near 2,000 yards. And they had 10 penalties in their first game alone against the Buccaneers. What does that say about Mike McCarthy and the coaching staff?
Some things never change.
It says that Mike McCarthy can only succeed when his quarterback's first name is Aaron and happens to have the last name Rodgers. No, but I think it just goes to the point that, like, he's just not a special coach. He really isn't. And I think that he's thrown in the hot seat a little bit now because if the Cowboys really are the bottom barrel and they can't even push for the wild card, you better be looking out for some moves in the Cowboys organization the next few seasons. Nothing right away, of course.
One last quick thing too. Like, I know that the Cowboys have weapons, but they're really hurting without Tyron Smith right now on the offensive line. And it was already abysmal with Dak in there. I see it to be abysmal and then some in time in his absence. Now let's talk baseball.
Yeah. Well, I do want to make now you're glossing over my point. Just kidding.
But at least their defense did look good week one. Like that is being forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
That is being forgotten about because yes, their offense was horrible. Scored 3 points all game. Only team to not score a touchdown.
Even the Bears scored two.
Even the Bears scored, but they won.
In a slip and slide.
But the defense against Tom Brady, one touchdown and then field goals the rest of the game. So that is impressive on the defensive end.
No, it is. But my bold prediction, Mike McCarthy out after the season. Sean Payton, new head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. You can write that down. I'll write down.
You give Mike McCarthy to the end of the season, I give him week five.
No,
he's going to be the first coach gone midseason.
No, I don't think Jerry Jones will do that.
It's funny enough. I think I'm siding with TJ here. I think by like week nine, week 10, he'll be the first coach fired.
No, I don't think.
Because I just, even with Dak being injured, Jerry Jones does not like losing. So I think a change will be made, and I think it'll be an interim coach for the time being. Not sure Sean Payton will be the permanent head coach because he's got a nice little gig now with Fox Sports, but I do think he'll be the first coach fired, and it'll be this year.
All right. So we all kind of agree he'll be fired, but I think he'll be at the end of the season. And Castle, what do you think? End of the season or midseason?
I don't think he's going to be fired this season. I really don't. I mean, even though he has stalled a little bit going into the playoffs and he hasn't made it past the first round, I don't think he should be fired I don't think he should be fired after this season because he can't do anything about Dak being hurt. Yes, he is the coach and a lot of it is on him to restructure, but I think it would be a little quick to fire him.
Look no further than the stats that TJ just brought up. Discipline falls on the head coach, right?
Yes, it does. I'm not disagreeing with that.
So I think that really will play a factor. But I do think what will happen now that I just remembered who they have, it'll be easier for the Cowboys to fire Mike McCarthy because look at who their coordinator is. Their defensive coordinator is Dan Quinn, right?
Yeah.
A guy with head coaching experience.
Next man up.
The guy who Jerry Jones wanted to be the head coach all along. And it's public that Jerry Jones really likes Dan Quinn. So I think that'll be the interim head coach.
I think he's going to wait till the end of the year so he can get Sean Payton. I'm saying it. Anyways, I think, you know, there's a lot more football to be talked. So we'll save that for next week. But let's talk some baseball as I'm currently watching because I'm recording this podcast, but I got the Yankees on the background, occasionally peeking my head over. And actually it's funny because Aaron Judge is up right now and his numbers, batting over 300, 57 home runs, over 120 RBIs.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. I thought maybe a little more by now, but he leads MLB, not just American League, the MLB. And home runs by like 20, RBIs by a pretty large margin now. And
he's second for average, right? Or he's like,
third or fourth.
Third in American League because Bogarts and Arraez are tied for first.
Okay.
He's 9 points below them.
They were talking about him being in the Triple Crown race last night.
Well, yeah, he's 9 points below for average. And if he gets his average above them, then he'd be the walkaway Triple Crown because no one is close in homers and RBIs.
No. And so now most people, especially us Yankee or every Yankee fan, probably every Yankee fan, I can't speak for every single Yankee fan, but I would say the 99.99999% of Yankee fans would say Aaron Judge is MVP. You go to Yankee Stadium for a game and they're chanting MVP. Now, a lot of people, despite those incredible numbers, and there's still a month, a little less than a month, I think it's like 3 weeks exactly left in the season from today. A lot of people are still saying Shohei Ohtani for MVP. And it's tough with Shohei because he gets the argument that he pitches and he hits. And obviously, like, his numbers are insane and the fact that he can have success doing both. But to me, my reasoning is one, I got two reasons. I'll let you guys, you know, kind of talk about it too. If you're just going to use that same reason every year, then like why might as well just give him the MVP award until he retires. You know, I think that's just not, that's a lame excuse, but you just, there's no way you use that excuse or that reason every single year. And then this year, with him playing, the Angels are nowhere near first place in the West. They're not going to, or not even the playoffs. Aaron Judge, if it wasn't for Aaron Judge, the Yankees would be nowhere near the position they are in right now. For a while there, they were positioned to be the best team in baseball by a large margin. And then they, you know, we won't talk about it, but they had that large, you know, fall off, and Judge was playing, but pretty much the entire season, he's been their offense. He's been keeping them beating, keeping them going. You know, if it wasn't with them, the Yankees would really have no pulse. They had a pulse in the beginning of the year because everyone was kind of playing well. But then from the, like, after the All-Star break on, you know, until kind of recently when they've won a few series, no pulse at all. It's literally just been Aaron Judge. So to me, Aaron Judge is the most valuable player because, like I said, you take him off the Yankees are not in first place in the American League East. They're not in second place in the American League East. They may be third or fourth with the Orioles. That's me. Castle, what do you think?
I think what you just said is accurate. I mean, what does MVP stand for? Most valuable player. He brings value to the Yankees that if we didn't have him, like you said, we wouldn't be in first. We wouldn't be staying in first. We wouldn't be, you know, keeping afloat. I understand why people are going in other directions for MVP, but at the end of the day, if you really watch baseball and you really watch the Yankees from the first half of the season to the All-Star break to now, there shouldn't be a debate. I mean, Judge is that guy. He's, as Michael Kay said, he's the Harry Styles of baseball. He's just that guy. And I don't think there's any other way to put it.
It's crazy that this is even a debate, because people are saying that a guy can be the most valuable player on a team that's 20 games below 500, makes them a better team than a guy who is now the face of baseball and the best player on the second best team in the AL. The guy, that same guy is who is going to break the home run record, arguably having the best hitting season of all time, won't win MVP, is beyond me. And Stevie, you said it best, that with what Ohtani is doing is incredible. Don't get me wrong. But it defeats the purpose of most valuable player if this is just what he's going to be doing every year. But I've been talking to a lot of people, and if you eliminate, you just focus each of his games side by side, you look just at his pitching, he's not a top five candidate for Cy Young. He's got very good stats, but very good isn't great. He's not one of the best. He's not in the top five pitching in the AL right now. There's plenty of other guys who are better than him this year, pitching wise. He's a very good pitcher, but he is not great this year. He's very good hitting. He's having a very good season. He's probably having a much better hitting season than pitching. That goes with the team. I get that. But it also helps that he's being supported by a guy named Mike Trout, who has more homers than him, has a better batting average than him. Mike Trout is on an 8-game homer streak right now. Mike Trout is one of the best players of all time. And now you have Shohei hitting behind him, protecting Mike Trout. So that definitely helps. Aaron Judge has to bat leadoff in order to see pitches to hit now, because if not, he would be getting pitched around. You combine Shohei Ohtani's combined war, so that's pitching and hitting, is still less than Aaron Judge's hitting war. It's incredible the numbers that he's doing. But yeah, people still want to say that Ohtani is the MVP. It really doesn't make sense. How much worse can the Angels be if Ohtani wasn't doing what he's doing? Like, I guess you could say, oh, they'd be 40 wins below 500, which, you stink already. You can't get much worse than that.
Well, wasn't there that game where the Angels hit like seven home runs and they still lost?
Yeah, they had seven homers and they lost.
Like it's just, and I think Ohtani had like one or two.
Yeah.
So that's what.
So he's 12-8 as a starter, which with a 2.55 ERA. So the ERA is very good. 188 strikeouts. That's very good. 12-8 records is not that good for a starter. And Gerrit Cole's is very similar. And I'm not saying Gerrit Cole's a Cy Young this year at all.
No, I'm not even close.
But then you look at his hitting stats. He's got 35 homers or 34 homers, 88 RBIs, but he's batting 260, which I guess for a power hitter, that is very good. Aaron Judge is batting 310, has 57 homers, 123 RBIs. Like, it really is beyond me.
And to me, like...
And, sorry, I just wanted to add one more thing. This is September baseball. This is pressure baseball. Playoff baseball. We just said that the Angels are 20 games below 500, so they're playing meaningless baseball. Pressure levels are very different.
It is. And
case dismissed.
And perfect. And Judge with the gavel, what do they call it? But my last couple points. And TJ, if you have a point on this too, I'll go to you. I just want to say mine before I forget what I have to say. But from like you're saying, like one of the most historical offensive seasons ever. Any other year
compared to Barry Bonds levels.
Yeah.
The steroid era and Judge is doing without steroids, but he's also not hitting for power. Like he's on a triple crown watch. That means he's hitting for average too. Like he's just putting the ball in play.
Yeah. In like any other year, if it was, or any other year with like a guy without a guy like Shohei, Judge would already have the MVP award locked, you know, once he hit like probably 50 home runs, it would have been locked. But the fact that a guy like Shohei is playing right now, which, you know, goes to Shohei as a player. And again, you can't knock what he does, but then you're not going to count, you know, Judge in the field. Like Judge is such a great defender in the field too.
Playing a new position too.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so he really is the most valuable guy because now, like, which Cabrera looking great and right, you can able to, you know, play Judge at center because he plays well there. You know, if he didn't play well there, then it's like this is why this Judge is the most valuable player, because you can pretty much DH him, play him in center, play him right, and his bat's going to be good no matter. Like, he's the most valuable player, and he's what's keeping the Yankees going. And, you know, TJ, I don't know if there's any much more, you know, that we haven't said that you can bring up. I still want to hear, you know, obviously your points, because again, you know, you have many, many hats. So you could be pulling all the, you know, a new stat that we didn't have that can offer even more to the reasoning why we believe Aaron Judge should be the MVP. Unless if you think Shohei is, you know, I don't want to just automatically assume that you're a Judge goer for MVP, which I assume you are.
Do you know how you know how ridiculous you sound right now, Stevie?
I always sound pretty ridiculous, so I don't like to
assume this. Please just assume next time, because I'm in. All right, I'm in.
All right, good.
Well, just to like add on to all your points about the Angels just being atrocious, they are now finishing under 500 for the seventh straight season, which is the longest active streak in MLB in the MLB right now.
But they have two generational talents that are being wasted. Ohtani may not even be there come next offseason.
Yeah, and my thing is, and like, A, to all the people that think Ohtani deserves the MVP over Aaron Judge just sounded as ridiculous as Stevie did. But it also brings into question, like, what, is Aaron Judge going to have to be a fucking lockdown ace, pardon my language? But is he going to have to be a lockdown ace to be an MVP conversation with people like Shohei? Like, you can't go around being all willy-nilly with the MVP trophy just because somebody can also pitch.
I'll do you one better. Okay, so yes, we know Ohtani's a great two-way player, but Judge is arguably, you can make the argument, he's the best defensive center fielder right now, right?
Absolutely.
I'd say that it's a fair argument. I'm not saying he is, but it's a fair argument, right?
It's a valid argument.
Ohtani only DHs. So he could play the fields. He's a very good hitter. He's a very good pitcher. He could play the field. He only DHs. So I guess you could say that would be three positions that he'd be doing, which it's a lot. Don't get me wrong. But it's that same argument that people are having. It just sounds so ridiculous. Judge, one of the best center fielders. Ohtani, a two-way guy. So it just sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah, and to kind of finish it off, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Ohtani was a outfielder, correct?
Right fielder, yeah, I believe.
Yeah, I remember when he first came on and everyone realized that he was this unicorn. Like, I remember the MLB had to, like, make rules just for Shohei so he could play. Both pitch and play the field, but now he just DHs, which I guess that kind of takes away an aspect of him for MVP compared to Aaron Judge, but I rest my case. And like to go along with all your points too, like Aaron Judge got moved into center field this year. Like he picked up the slack with obviously Aaron Hicks, who was rocking center field for a while, and the emergence of Cabrera. You can give Judge all the accolades you want. My favorite thing is, where are all those people that are still saying Aaron Judge is just a home run hitter? He either hits a home run or he strikes out. Where are those people? Where have they been? That's right. They've been quiet because this man can hit for average.
And walks a lot, too.
Walks a lot?
Well,
he's getting intentionally walked.
Especially now. I mean, look back at last night's game. He got intentionally walked, got on base, and he was a winning run.
And then when he wasn't intentionally walked in the eighth inning, hit a second homer of the game.
Right. And like, it's funny now that he has to lead off just to get pitched to. Like, you guys brought that up before.
You don't see power hitters leading off. You see the high average guys, which Aaron Judge
he is. It's just so mind-boggling to me. And people still refuse to acknowledge the fact that this is something you may never see again. Without the help of steroids, i.e. Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa.
And then not that A-Rod had the same kind of numbers, but then.
Right.
A-Rod.
Judge is already past A-Rod numbers.
Yeah.
He's chasing the 61 and 61 from Roger Maris. He's on pace right now for 64 or 65. So he's going to absolutely shatter that record if he stays on it. And like, it's just something special. And I wish more people took it seriously just how special this season is, not only just for like Yankee fans, but baseball fans. When will we see this again? Who knows?
Hopefully next year when he's still in pinstripes. But
you know, when he breaks his own record again?
Yeah, listen, all right, sign me up. But no, it really is. And I like to your point, the season he's having is not just an MVP type season either. I mean, it's like a historic season. Like you said, one that we probably won't see for a long time by a non-steroid, like a cheating way, you know? And he was robbed his full rookie year when he hit 52 because of Altuve. And that's a whole another issue and topic for not even another day, but a whole another month, year, whatever. Anyways, he better get it. I think he will. You know, I think all this talk and stuff of Ohtani, because I think it's pretty clear Judge will get it, but they still want to make news out of it and keeping competitive. And that's why they're saying Ohtani has a good chance. And listen, Ohtani does have a good chance, but there's just no way that Judge being like the face of baseball now, or, you know, I think he's really made himself the face of baseball. Especially the fact that he betted on himself, you know, being, you know, under contract for this one last year and not signing a new contract, like it was just too good. So obviously when the news is officially announced who wins MVP, which I forget, is that once the season ends or is that not to like far in the office? I think that's pretty much right as the season ends. So, you know, in the next couple of weeks we'll know and you'll talk more about it, but let's kind of go back to football. But we're going to bring back our good old segment, Stardom Sit-Ups. So, Castle, since we haven't from you. Well, we heard, you know, you're talking about Judge, but since, you know, we kind of kept going, I want to get you back in the show. And who are you starting this week? Or who should people, not who you are starting, but who should people start if they have these guys on their teams?
All right. So my two starts are going to be two wide receivers. One is probably expected. The other one might be a little bold. We'll see how you guys take it. First one is DJ Moore against the Giants. This hurts me to say, but secondary is going to be short, as TJ mentioned. No Aaron Robinson. So it's going to be interesting to see what that's going to be like. A lot of young guys, a lot of inexperienced guys are going to be picking up the slack. DJ Moore past few seasons has had, I think, 1,000-yard seasons. He's been very solid. And that loss, because the Browns won last week, correct? That's what I thought. Browns losing, that's got to sting for Baker. He's going to be feeling extra dangerous this week. So I'm expecting a big game from Moore. So if you've got him, definitely start him. Don't know if he's a number one guy, but he is definitely a number two or flex on your team, no doubt. Next guy I want to talk about is Mr. George Pickens, the rookie receiver for the Steelers. They're going up against the Patriots this week, who last week allowed over 20 points against the Dolphins. I think Pickens is an explosive draft pick for them. Didn't do much last week, but with the lack of defense from the Patriots, I'm expecting Money Mitch to give him some more looks this week. I don't think he should be a number two guy. Definitely not a number one guy, but if you need a filler at flex, go for him. I'm expecting 10 to 15 points for him. No touchdown, but I'm definitely expecting a good amount of receptions from him.
Before we continue, I just want to give a little fun fact, because I know Cass will appreciate this. There was only one rookie wide receiver who scored a touchdown last week. You know who that was, Castle?
Mr. Dotson.
He had two, not one.
Yeah, that's he's. We'll have to talk more about him next week. I'm very mixed about him. But in terms of the guys that you should be sitting, the first one, it's not one player. It's an entire team or entire part of a team, and that's the Cardinals defense, ranked 32 in fantasy. Don't always go by rankings, but the fact that they gave up 44 last week against the Chiefs, going up against the Raiders this week, who, yes, Derek Carr did throw an interception last week. However, I'm expecting Derek Carr to have a better game. I'm expecting more guys on the offense to get more looks, not just in the passing game, but in the running game. So if you're one of those guys that likes to hoard defenses, or if you're in a league where there's a good amount of defenses that you can pick up, definitely pick them up and swap them out. And the other guy that I'm saying to sit this week, and this might be a little surprising because of the matchup, but it's Amari Cooper. He's going to be up against Sauce Gardner. Last week, as we discussed, he had a good game. He had, I think, an incomplete pass. He was limited amount of targets. Josh Utah.
Pass breakup on Mark Andrews.
Pass breakup on Andrews. Limited amount of targets his way. I think that, you know, the matchup is going to be there. And as we know, the quarterback situation is not ideal right now for Cleveland. I think they're not only going to be looking to their dual backs more, but I think Sauce Gardner is going to do a good job limiting Cooper. So if you can afford to bench him, definitely bench him. I mean, if you have to start him, don't make him a number one or two. At most, he's a flex, but if you have the depth, sit him. I'm expecting 10 points or less for him this week.
I'm expecting 1 point or less.
Well, you know what? I like those picks a lot, and we'll have to see if you call the right shots, you know, with those come Sunday. But Fromitz, you seem pretty eager to go, so I don't want to hold you back anymore. Who started?
Appreciate it, Stevie. Appreciate it. I actually just made a change to one of my starts. I had someone in mind pre-show, and then I was like, you know what? We're talking about a certain team, and it really got me thinking some more. So the first start I'm going to go with is in tomorrow's game, Thursday night football, the bright lights, primetime football, the debut of Amazon Prime, it's only fitting to start Gerald Everett. We talked about Keenan Allen being out, and that really is a big loss, not only for Castle's team, but for Gerald, but for Justin Herbert. So what is he going to do? He's going to be looking for his big target, his big tight end. Gerald Everett has very good hands. He's one of the better receiving tight ends in the league. And I really expect at least a touchdown, maybe two, from Gerald Everett. The Chiefs defense is good, but statistically, historically, the last couple of years, it's not great. And especially in a very competitive AFC West with firepower offenses ready to explode, I really think it's going to be the Gerald Everett show on Thursday Night Football. It's going to be weird. It's going to be a tight end show on Thursday Night Football. Everett, Kelsey, we're in for a treat, even though people may not think so. But I told you if it happens. And my other start will be running back Melvin Gordon. And it's weird. Melvin Gordon is the backup to Javonte Williams, or so people thought, because he ended up having more carries than Javonte Williams. So it might seem like Javonte is going to be more of a passing down running back and Melvin Gordon is going to be a running down running back. And this week they're playing the Texans, a team that they really should beat. They should have won week one convincingly, but as we know, their head coach smoked a few blunts before the game and had some questionable decisions, which led to a loss.
He was at Rocky Mountain High when he made that call.
But at home against the Texans, come on. I'm expecting Russell Wilson to throw at least five touchdowns that game.
Well, he might. Well, Nathaniel Hackett might be even higher this game because he'll be back home in Colorado. So
yeah, true. So if that's the case, then run the shit out of the ball, which is Melvin Gordon. There you go. Melvin Gordon is going to feast. The Texans defense, I really couldn't tell you who they have besides Derek Stingley, their rookie, who looked absolutely terrible week one. Got cooked by Michael Pittman. But I really think Melvin Gordon is going to continue to prove his fantasy stock and have a very solid outing because he got some good touches last week.
Now, who are you sitting?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know, Mr. Stevie B?
Not always.
The first one is a little controversial because you had the same guy in mind, but you know, as they say, great minds think alike. It's going to be Rashad Penny of the Seattle Seahawks going up against a very tough 49ers defense, a very angry 49ers defense. I would say they got embarrassed on the road last week playing against the Bears in a little water park football.
But the thing is too,
their defense looked very good.
Especially their run defense.
Their run defense shut down Montgomery. Fields was very limited in his runs, but their offense just couldn't score for shit. Neither offense was able to score for shit, but that's besides the point. The Bears got the dub. That's all that matters. I think Rashad Penny and Kenneth Walker is returning, or is question has been upgraded to questionable instead of doubtful, which means already that could be some split carries for Penny because he was the clear number one last week. Kenneth Walker, who they took very highly, is probably going to play. I think that'll be the end of the Rashad Penny show. And going up against Nick Bosa, Eric Armstrong, Fred Warner, that's a very good run defense. I think it's going to be a very tough matchup. So fantasy owners, you might want to let him ride the bench this week. There's plenty of other options out there at running back. And then my other, I just don't like the matchup. I think he can do very well this year, but matchup-wise, I'm not really sold on. And it's going to be Chris Olave against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's a very talented kid coming out of the Ohio State University. New Orleans Saints, Tampa Bay Bucs. The Saints have had the Bucs number in recent years. That seems to be Tom Brady's kryptonite. But I really think that this is going to be the flip of the switch because there really is no reason why Tampa Bay doesn't blow the house down with that matchup. I think every aspect of their games, I think Tampa is much better. I really don't have faith in Jameis Winston being the quarterback. I just don't see it being a good, a fun matchup to watch. I think Tampa's going to blow them out, and I think it's going to start with shutting down the receivers. So those are my two starts and my two sits.
Interesting. The Melvin Gordon one, I'm still kind of questioning, but hey, listen, I could be wrong because he did get more carries. So I'm just,
I was shocked when I saw, I was going through some stats and I saw, and it's not like it was a close number. Like, it was a sizable margin that Melvin Gordon got more touches. And I don't think that's coincidental.
That is true. You could be onto something. So we'll have to once again see.
And you just look at how the game played out, and Denver was in more passing situations, which led to more Javonte dump offs, which really helped him in fantasy. But if they're blowing out Houston and that defense, there's no way that Houston run defense is going to be able to contain them. So I really think Melvin Gordon's going to be able to feast, and he's still young. He's still talented. It's really, he's just had some unfortunate injuries. He's still a very talented back.
That is true. We'll see. And then TJ, I know, you had a busy day today, but you still were able to get a stardom and a sit him. So, who you got?
Well, before we recorded the show, apparently this is in shambles for Castle's team, but my start this week is Darrell Henderson versus Atlanta. He, as we all know, he got a bulk of the carries in week one against the Bills. The offensive line didn't look great at all, and Cam Akers only got 3 carries for 0 yards.
But apparently, I don't mean to interrupt, but apparently Cam Akers didn't utilize all of his opportunities. Give me a break.
I mean, from the clip I saw, he missed a block and Stafford got nailed.
So then explain why he didn't play a single snap in the first quarter.
I don't know. I can't.
Sorry.
I'm not Sean McVay. I don't know.
That was frustration because I agree with your pick, but it's frustrating because it shouldn't be the situation, but keep going.
Right. And it's uncertain how Akers is going to do. And if he'll get any more touches, if not, I hope he gets more than 3, but it was just an abysmal week one performance from the Rams overall. It didn't reflect well on them, especially because they're the defending Super Bowl champions. But I think Darrell Henderson's a good lock, especially against Atlanta. And my sit, it's the Stephen A in me, but it's also, I don't like the matchup either. And that's sitting CeeDee Lamb versus the Cincinnati Bengals. I won't talk about this too much, but as we know, Dallas lost Dak Prescott, let alone their offensive line is really hurting without Tyron Smith. I think it's not going to be a great game for Cooper Rush. It's not going to be a great game for the Cowboys offense, at least. Their defense still can keep them in games, as we went over beforehand. But I think overall, and plus Cincinnati was stout against that Steelers offense. It may not have looked that way throughout the entire game, but the Cincinnati defense did keep them in that game. On top of that, we all saw that performance from that new offensive line protecting the Joe Burrow. He got hit, what, sacked 4 times?
Something like that, yeah.
I know he threw a handful of interceptions. It didn't look great for the Cincinnati offense. Their defense kept them in that game and brought them down to evidently a blocked field goal from Minka Fitzpatrick. But to end my point, CeeDee Lamb, as much as it may just sound like I'm a Cowboys hater at this point, it's not a good matchup week for CeeDee Lamb in my professional opinion, even though I'm not a professional.
Well, being a non-outside NFC East guy, I can totally get behind that. So there you go. And for one of my sits, I might seem like a Packers hater, but we'll get to that right now. So my first start, Antonio Gibson playing Detroit. Miles Sanders toasted the Lions defense. Miles Sanders, he kind of came to league, put up some good numbers, kind of highly rated. And then last year, it wasn't really utilized well and stuff like that. But the fact that he had a big week one against the Lions defense, Antonio Gibson, he had a solid week one against the Jaguars. So Because he was used, you know, rushing the ball and then also getting a lot of receiving targets. So I just don't see how he can't have a good game if he's getting the ball a lot. So especially against the Lions defense, who, you know, had a tough time stopping, you know, a guy like Miles Sanders. I think it's, you know, Antonio Gibson should have a great week two game. My first sit, I guess I'll go start sit. My first sit is Aaron Jones. Now, I know I'm going to seem like a Packers hater, whatever. I know it's their home opener at Lambeau. But here's the thing. Who knows? Like, I don't know how they're going to utilize Dylan and Aaron Jones. You know, they kind of, it was a weird how they used them last week against Minnesota. And the Bears stopped the 49ers rushing attack pretty well. And really in that game, that's all either team could do, is because neither team could pass a ball because it was such poor weather. So I think, I really think that, and I think, you know, the Packers offense is not as good as it once was. And the Bears defense is more underrated than people think. And, you know, I know I'm going to sound real biased, but I think Aaron Jones, like, he's going to get split reps with AJ Dillon no matter what. And I just don't know, you know, how they're going to utilize him. So if I were you and you have him, you have someone else, I would sit Aaron Jones. Now, my other start, I got Gabe Davis, Buffalo receiver, monster week one against the Rams, reigning Super Bowl champs. Now he plays against Tennessee. And we saw, you know, like Sterling Shepard burn the Titans secondary deep for that long touchdown. And Daniel Jones was able to kind of pick apart the Titans defense here and there. And that's the Giants offense and Daniel Jones, who've, you know, in the past have been shaky. So why can't Josh Allen, you know, torch them? And a guy like Gabe, you know, obviously a lot of attention will be on Stephon Diggs. So that just leaves Gabe Davis, you know, should be pretty open. So if you got Gabe Davis, I really like him for the whole year. And then especially this week, Monday night, I believe it's in Buffalo too. So, you know, the Buffalo fans are going to be going crazy and it should be a good game. Now this sit could also be a little controversial. Najee Harris. Now I know he's, you know, really considered a top running back in fantasy. Had a pretty solid week one, but he did get hurt. He hurt his ankle. And he's going against the Patriots. And I know the Patriots didn't look good, but they still stopped Miami's rushing attack. And I know Najee Harris is not just a true rusher. Like, you know, he's a threat receiving too. But I think the Patriots are going to do everything in their power to stop Najee and let Mitch Trubisky beat them. You know, they'd rather see Mitch Trubisky beat them than Najee Harris because they know Najee is, you know, a threat. So I really think Najee, especially if his ankle is not 100%, and the way they performed week one, I think Bill Belichick's going to have them playing much better. So I would say sit Najee Harris, unless you really can't. But if you can afford to, I would sit him. So
Najee's going for 200 yards this week.
Hey, listen, you know, if he does, then I'll be a man and own up to my word. But I really, I don't think, you know, I'm not saying the rest of this, you know, I'm just saying for this week in particular, I'm not the highest on him. So we'll have to see. But that's why we love this start him and sit him segment, because sometimes we're right and then sometimes we're wrong. So, yeah, so I think we got a lot of good picks in, so we'll have to see what happens with another great week of football underway. And just a few quick shout-outs before we end the show. Shout-out to TJ. Well, you know, TJ, like I said, now you're like full-time guy, but thanks again for keeping our social media up to date and looking good and always great content. So thank you for doing that. And then
there's going to be a fire post for after the show because Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina just made history. So keep an eye out for that, listeners.
And you heard it firsthand from TJ, the man himself. So that's pretty cool. Also, shout out to Liberty Shirt Co. You know, we see the guys back on Fox with the pregame shows, looking good, looking fly. and their shirts and stuff like that. So they're dressed to impress, and man, they're looking good. And you know, the summer went on, still haven't gotten mine yet, but now that you know, interviewing for jobs and stuff, I gotta look good. You know, maybe that's why I haven't been hired yet, because you know, they're like, oh man, this kid doesn't look too good yet. So but you know, they're great partnerships, so we thank them. Gotta say shout out Wild Chat Sports and Kevin. Just doing a phenomenal job as always. Great content, always getting cool guests on and always putting out cool content. So we like being partners with them. And then shout out to our new partner, OP Sports Betting. They've officially up and running, right? Just to confirm. Yeah, they're officially up and running now for a little bit. So they got a lot of bright things ahead. But it's good that they're, you know, they're rolling, and I'm sure, you know, they're going to be a lot of success in the future, and can't, you know, just so glad to be partners with them. So that's it for this, this week and this episode. So thank you everyone for listening, and please make sure to keep up to date and tune in for next week. Thank you.